Hello, and welcome to the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. I'm Olivia, your host, and on this podcast, we will talk about everything related to the journey to conceive, pregnancy, labor, birth, postpartum, parenthood, and beyond. This is a safe space where birth professionals, birthing people, expectant parents, and partners can come on and share their knowledge or personal experiences with our listeners. The goal of this podcast is to create connections, share stories, information, and resources to educate and empower people in their own personal journey. Good morning, listeners, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. Today, I have Caitlin with me. We recently connected over Instagram. She started a new account called Reality Parenting. And it's basically just about real life and parenting and talking about the things that people don't always talk about. So Caitlin, do you want to introduce yourself to everybody today?
Yeah. Hi. Thank you so much for bringing me on the podcast. So my name is Caitlin, like you said. I'm from Ontario, Canada. My husband and I are both in the military. We are crazy busy with our two kids and our German Shepherd. But yeah, like you said, I opened up that Instagram page because when I first became a mom, social media just painted such an unrealistic picture of what parenthood was. So I was just completely overwhelmed and like in over my head with, you know, I was expecting a child that never cries, a child that never gets dirty. I'd also had like zero experience with babies, so I didn't like my first diaper I ever changed was in the hospital with my eldest.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, so I just wanted to open a page that parents could share like the hard stuff that we don't really like to talk about and share not posed pictures and just get the truth out there.
Yeah. And I can totally relate to that. I mean, granted, I had worked with kids for a long time, so I had a lot of experience with kids and babies and that sort of thing. But when you have your own, it is literally just like a completely different experience. And in my mind, I was naive, like, oh, like I got this, I figured it out. And then you have your baby and you're like, nope, this is all new. This is going to take some time to adjust to.
Are you sure I can leave the hospital with this little thing? Or like, I have no idea.
Right. And that's like what you said too. I feel like it's important to talk about the fact that there are going to be really, really good and happy moments, but there are also going to be really like difficult moments that, I mean, you have a new baby, you're adjusting to all of your hormones completely changing, you're sleep deprived, you know? So talking about these things and really opening up these conversations is also important. So people have realistic expectations of what it's going to be like what you just said. You're like, oh, my baby's never going to cry, da 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 da. If we don't share these things, people don't know what expectations to have. And also, granted, every baby's different. So.
Absolutely. You're so right in that. Every baby is different. That being said, like my firstborn, she was a challenging baby. She was born with a condition called laryngomalacia. It sounds way worse than it is. It's basically just a little piece of skin in her throat that was underdeveloped. Oh. So it caused really bad reflux, and it caused her to wheeze when she would breathe, and it would partially block her airway.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, it was petrifying. But nobody was open enough with me, like my parents, even my friends that had kids, nobody was open enough to tell me that it was really freaking hard. They always just said like, it's an amazing experience. Like you're gonna have so much fun. You know, they did say like, it'll be tough, but nobody really told me like those first 2 months, how nobody explained like postpartum. And I mean, physically and internally, like all of your hormonal turmoil that's going on. The physical part got me for a loop too, because everybody, you know, prepares you for the pain of labor, mm-hmm. but nobody prepares you for the recovery from that.
The healing.
So I think that kind of sparked a bit of like anxiety mm-hmm. with me. Mm-hmm. I had a vaginal delivery for both my babies. Yeah. I can't imagine a C-section. So wow, those moms are superstars.
Yeah.
But yeah, even so, that kind of just started it off great for me, wearing the diaper for 2 weeks. There's way more to that story, but if you want me to go into that, I'm
sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm totally fine with it.
Okay,
whatever you want to share.
Okay, sorry to the listeners. But so my OB, who I had been seeing for, you know, the 8 months leading up to the actual birth, was great. I had heard good things about him, and then there's three doctors on call at the hospital that I gave birth at, and the two other doctors I had just heard rumors about, like nothing good. So when I went into labor, when my water broke at home, and I went into labor, and I had heard the doctor that was on call, it was not my doctor, and it was one of the ones that I dreaded having.
Okay.
So I was upset with that. We won't get too much into the birth story, but at the end, when, you know, she finally did come out, I did have second degree tearing, which I think is pretty common.
I did too.
So he gave me my stitches, and then they do a check to make sure that they stitch properly so that everything still works down there, front and back. And he had made a mistake where he had actually stitched like my rectum, which was, I didn't obviously know about it at the time. So he had to undo it and then restitch it all back up.
So while you were there?
So
like right after birth?
This is all while I'm like just holding my baby. Like I have no idea what's happening down there, but I did notice he was down there for like 45 minutes after my baby was born. Mm-hmm. And he just explained to me, he's like, hey, like we did this check. Like I had made a mistake. I corrected it. You're good to go now. It's just going to be like extra tender because I stitched twice.
Right.
I was like, okay, whatever. Like, I do not care. I have this beautiful child in front of me. Like, I still don't feel anything. So fast forward, 2 months or whatever, when my husband and I try to be intimate again, and it like does not work. And I mean, we cannot have sex because pretty open, but like he couldn't get inside of me. Like it would not fit.
Yeah.
So I was like, something's wrong. I need to go see the doctor. So I go see the doctor, my family doctor. She's amazing. She takes a peek and she says, okay, this looks a little strange, but like it probably just your scar tissue, just because again, there was so much stitching done. The scar tissue is just a little bit thicker. So we're going to send you for pelvic floor therapy, I believe is what it was called.
Yep.
Which is basically, they just do an exercise with an instrument. Which is basically a dildo.
Yeah.
I didn't actually end up going because it petrified me. And they basically just, the idea behind it was just to like get blood flow to that tissue so that it would heal and soften.
Right.
So I didn't go, because I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So I just said to my husband, like, hey, this is just something that we're going to have to live with. Like, I will do my best to make it work. Like we just be patient with me. It'll get better eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say 11 months later, we became pregnant again. And I went in, confirmed my pregnancy. All was good. 12 weeks later, I went for just my growth scan. Mm-hmm. And I had a miscarriage. It was a missed miscarriage. So the baby... I should have been 12 weeks. The baby had stopped growing at 6, but my body didn't recognize the miscarriage. So I was carrying this, you know,
your baby.
Baby for a little, like a month and a half. That kind of bothered me, the fact that I was carrying it thinking I was pregnant, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all sad and. Yeah, it's fine though. It happens.
Well,
I had my firstborn, so.
I know, but it doesn't take away from the fact that, like, that's your baby. It's not, like, and that's the other thing, too, is that I feel like people just expect people to bounce back from losing a baby, and it's not easy, and people are afraid to talk about it because they're like, oh, it's morbid, they don't want to talk about it, but I want you, like, your feelings are valid. Like, that was your baby, and it's, you went around thinking that you had your baby and your baby was growing, and then you found out that it wasn't. Like, that's not, it's not fine. It's hard. Like, I can't even imagine.
It wasn't fine. But what got me through, like, I'm a pretty strong, thick skinned person. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was very upset.
Yeah.
It did take a toll on me for a few weeks. But thank God I had my firstborn. I had a child to hold on to and say, you know what, like, this wasn't meant to be, mm-hmm. but thank God I have Eloise.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't for her, I can't imagine trying to conceive for the first time and losing it.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate in that fact. And then I also thought to myself, like, hey, if I'm that 25%, if I fall in that statistic,
mm-hmm.
maybe, I know it doesn't work this way, but maybe my, you know, my sisters or my friends, like, won't fall into that statistic because I am a little bit stronger than some of my friends.
Yeah.
Like, I can handle things a little bit better.
Right.
So that kind of got me through. But back to the botched recovery. So I would go in for a DNC. I needed a DNC because my body didn't react to the miscarriage and I had had to get out. So I went in for the DNC, and the doctor that did the DNC was the one that misstitched me when I had my first. And the second he went down there to do his thing, he said, oh my gosh, I stitched you up too tight.
I knew you were going to say that. I was waiting for it.
And I was like, wait a second. I was like, what do you mean you stitched me up too tight? He's like, I don't know how I can say this otherwise. Like, it's too tight. He's like, I was like, lovely. Okay. So he does the DNC and says, okay, come back in 2 weeks and we will fix the hospital. And of course it's a student hospital. So I go into this room and there's like 15 people and they have me up on the table, mm-hmm. you know, wide open, and on a big screen monitor is all of me.
Did they ask you about that?
Yeah. So when I became a patient at the hospital, with my doctor, it's a student hospital.
Okay. Sorry. I just wanted to
say, yeah, yeah, they do let you know. And like, I'm not shy about it. I mean, I wasn't super excited, but not so much about the students watching. I know they don't care. You know what I mean? Like, they're not like excited to see anything or whatever. Like, but I think just seeing myself on the monitor kind of freaked me out because like I've never seen myself like that before. And then so they do the freezing, which was terrible, and then I basically watched him like laser cut my area, and then he used like a chemical to like burn it and like seal it,
like cauterize it.
So that was cool. Yeah,
that was cool. Oh my God.
that was really cool. I'll never forget that. But yeah, so after all this, you know, or not even after, during all of this, Eloise has her laryngomalacia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting no sleep because of her wheezing. It's petrifying me. And the doctor's telling me that like her airway could get blocked while she's sleeping. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like I need to constantly watch her and make sure she's still breathing, which I think every parent goes through.
Yeah, agreed.
But so yeah, so little to no sleep. And my husband was also struggling with the lifestyle change
mm-hmm.
of becoming a parent in those first few months. So I felt really alone.
Yep.
At that time. I also felt because I'm so hard-headed and stubborn, and I was afraid to be open and talk about it
mm-hmm.
and talk about how mm-hmm. I was feeling alone and how I felt like I didn't know what I was doing. I felt trapped. I felt like I loved my child and yeah. I would do anything for her at the time and still to this day, of course. But in the moment I felt that I had done something that I couldn't undo
mm-hmm.
and I missed my life prior.
Absolutely.
And I felt that because I was feeling these feelings of not regret, but I don't even know how to explain it. But if you've experienced it, any listeners or yourself personally, like, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Just this overwhelming fear.
It's kind of like people don't talk about the fact that they mourn their old life. Like, there's going to be a point where you miss your old life. You miss being able to just go about doing whatever you did prior. And that doesn't mean that you don't love your baby. It doesn't mean that you don't want them. It just is, it's okay to have like a grieving period. And at any point, as a parent. Yep. Like, there are going to be times where you're like, I wish I could just, like, go and do my thing and not have to worry about a baby clinging to me or a baby clinging to my boob. And that's also something that people are afraid to talk about, because then people, they're worried about what other people will think. Okay, like, oh, well, you're lucky you have a baby. Okay, yes, I am, and I'm grateful for that, and I love them so much, but I can also talk about my feelings and the fact that I'm feeling alone, I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'm feeling tired, my body's hurting. Yep. These are the things that, like, why I'm so glad to be sitting here having such an open conversation with you, because there are so many beautiful things about parenting, but there are also really difficult things about parenting. And, like, mm-hmm. talking about these things and opening up these conversations so people can understand, hey, if they're feeling that, they're not the only ones who have felt it. There's like a stigma. Like, if you're even like what you were saying, like people who are trying to conceive and have a hard time, and then they do get pregnant, and then they have these feelings of, like, overwhelm, or they're not ready for their body to change, or then once the baby's here, they have the same feelings, like, oh my God, like, I just miss every my life before this. And then they feel like they can't talk about that, because people who around them will be like, oh, well, you wanted this baby so bad and now you have it. It's just like, let people be open, let people talk about their feelings, because they need to talk about them. They need to know they're not the only ones. So
absolutely,
I totally know what you're saying.
Yeah. So I really struggled, and I went to my doctor for her 2 month needles, or her first appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And I just mentioned, you know, like, I was feeling a little bit down, and my husband and I were struggling a little bit at the time, you know, mostly not blaming the child, but, you know, it's hard.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, tell me exactly how you're feeling. So I explained to her, like, you know, I felt resentment towards my husband because he had the freedom. Like, I was breastfeeding, and I know, I understand that not everybody can breastfeed, but I was breastfeeding, and I, you know, Richard had that freedom. So I really resented him for that. I felt alone. I was sore. I missed my friends and family, like you said. And once I opened up to her and she reassured me that, because I didn't even really, like, know what postpartum depression was. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
So I thought what I was feeling was completely abnormal, and that I was never meant to be a mom. And she said, no, honey, like, this is a big part of it. And a lot of people struggle with it, and there are ways to make it better.
Yeah.
So we did a short, I think it was 3 month treatment. She gave me some pills. I forget what they were, like Zoloft or something.
Oh, okay.
And so I did that for 3 months. And then I said to her, like, hey, the baby's getting better. Like, I'm not so worried about it. I feel more comfortable being a mom. Routine's kind of starting to kick in. And then everything just kind of started to feel lighter. Like, life started coming back to normal. I was seeing friends and family. And then that was that. But then with my second, I experienced something similar, but very different at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think this one is definitely something people are really ashamed of or afraid to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, I don't even think have actually even heard of it. It's postpartum rage.
Yeah.
Had you heard of it prior to our conversation?
I had. I absolutely had. Yeah.
Yeah. So dealing, so my, when my second was born, my first was 2 years and 3 months old.
Okay.
So just coming into herself and beginning to push boundaries, you know, like any 2-year-old does.
Right.
And same thing kind of happening with the, you know, postpartum depression, like the holy crap, what have I done?
Yeah.
A little bit easier than the first time as far as the depression goes, because I kind of knew what to expect. So I knew that the feelings were normal, and that didn't scare me. But then I would catch myself, like, getting really, really, really upset, like angry over the smallest things.
Like, could you give an example?
Pippa is the name of my youngest.
Mm-hmm.
If I couldn't get her to settle, you know, after, and I'm talking like like newborn when, you know, they just don't settle. That should, like, when they just don't do it.
Yeah.
That would really upset me. And I would literally like rage scream into a pillow or like just rage scream out loud. Like I would catch myself like clenching and like getting really tense and just having to just like walk away and just being very angry. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately mm-hmm. my husband took a lot of that firsthand. And again, I started to feel abnormal. I thought that like my anger was not normal.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was life stresses on top of babies. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like I need help for this, but I don't know how to talk about it because I'm scared that if I tell somebody how angry I get, that they're going to like call Children's Aid Society. Not that I ever like would hurt my children or, but I felt like an unfit mother because I was just like so angry sometimes over nothing.
And that's the thing is like sitting here listening to you talking about like postpartum and like how I feel like there's just this stigma because of the world that we live in. It's like we're supposed to have babies and be happy and be fine all the time and have our shit together and not talk about the difficult things. And there's mm-hmm. this stigma where if you talk about anything postpartum, it's like, okay, you're automatically depressed. You're like, you have anxiety or you have other things that are going on. And you're like, no, like these are things that happen to people all over the world. And just because they don't talk about them doesn't mean that it's not normal. And I can totally relate to the postpartum rage. Like there, it's so, I feel like part of it is A, all your hormones are changing. B, you have two kids. I only have one. And so like the times where she just like wouldn't settle and you feel like you're doing everything you can, like everything you can to try and help. Like, have they been fed? Yes. Have they had their diaper changed? Yes. Have they had a nap? Yes. And they're still losing it and you can't figure out what it is. It's so, so frustrating. And you like in that moment, it's like, okay, you, like you said, go scream into a pillow, walk away or just like hand your baby off to your husband and be like, I just need a minute. And so you don't lose your freaking mind. Like,
absolutely.
It's so normal. And, but like you said, people are afraid to talk about these things because they don't want the DCF called on them or they don't want their baby taken away from them. And what it comes down to is like, we have to normalize these things that are normal that people aren't talking about. And so that like talking about it so we can normalize it. And also so people understand that like, what your expectations are surrounding having a baby, surrounding going from one baby to two babies. Like it's so, it drives me crazy that people have this like stigma and mindset of how like people should be postpartum. I don't understand it.
Yeah. So yeah. And that's exactly, you're exactly right on that. Moms are, I have great mom friends and seeing and speaking with people from my Instagram group, there are so many amazing moms out there. Like the support I've had is unreal, but moms love to shame moms. And I hate to say that.
I know.
But mom shaming is real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we fear being judged by other moms when we're doing the best that we can do.
Yes.
Like everybody is different. But it's just, yeah, I don't.
I agree with you.
It's a fear of being judged when we need to talking about how we're feeling in these hard depression or rage moments is the best therapy.
Yeah.
Because especially when you can speak with somebody that you're not afraid to talk to about it, because then you can relate and you can like share your mutual feelings or being just like, hey, I got really upset. With my like I remember like screaming at my infant, like yelling like shut up or whatever, like not nice things.
Yeah,
but I did in that moment. Like I couldn't control it. Like I could not control that tightening in my chest and my belly of just like anger.
Mm-hmm.
And then also that fortunately did go away again, like as soon as I talked to my doctor.
Yeah,
I said, remember last time I felt depression? She says, yes. How are you feeling this time? She's like, a lot of the times, if you experience postpartum depression with your first, you can expect it with your second. I was like, but this time's a little different. I'm angry. I'm very angry. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, well, that's also very normal. She's like, it's just not talked about. It's postpartum rage. And as soon as she said that, again, like a weight was lifted.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this is normal. This is okay. I just need to find an outlet to change how I'm, you know, experiencing these moments mm-hmm. that are hard. And yeah, I'm a very busy person. Like I always have something on the go. Like now I've got, you know, my Instagram page, my two kids. I'm in the military, but I'm not working from the COVID stuff.
Okay.
But I'm also doing like a major charity cycling ride. So I'm fundraising. I'm helping a friend with another major project. So just keeping busy helps me excel at being a mom.
Yeah.
So that would be like my recommendation to people that are struggling is just don't let motherhood completely consume you. Because it did with me. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I struggled.
Yeah. And I feel like what you're saying, like mom shaming is real. It absolutely is real. And I think there's also too, like sometimes people share things like, for me personally, like if I'm sharing the way that like I choose to parent my kids or my daughter, I should say, mm-hmm. Like I'm not saying you have to parent your child that way. And I feel like sometimes when you share these things, like what worked for you, then people automatically are like, well, no, like that's not what I'm doing. Or then they're like, should I be doing that? And there's so many layers because you're not trying to shame somebody else. You're just talking about your own personal experience. And I think there just needs to be like less judgment, like less, like everyone has their opinions. Everyone has their own way of doing things. Like you do you. Do what works for you. That's what matters at the end of the day, because that's what's going to keep you healthy, like mentally, emotionally. You have to do what works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. I think you're super right on that. Like parenting styles, like a big one for me was like bed sharing.
Yep.
A lot of people, that is a big
no,
you know, teeter totter of that's, well, yeah, like not to get into like debates, but like for you, is bed sharing something that you are like yay or nay?
Well, we do. We co-sleep. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we did too. Like my husband didn't sleep in the bed, but I had to with my first. I literally had to. Like that was the only way that I could get some sleep because she was right there.
Mm-hmm.
She was nursing.
Yep.
I was getting my rest. But then you get people that, you know, unfortunately there are times that bad things happen.
Right.
But that being said, it's what we had to do. Like we tried, and I mean everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked for us, and I don't care what if people, you know, tell me it's wrong. Like my family, I remember my grandma, for example, told me it was dangerous, and I said, Grandma, you come and live with this child for 2 days and tell me what your options were.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. Like in my mind before having my daughter, I didn't think we would co-sleep. I didn't think we would bed share. And it's not because I was against it. It's just, I didn't think of it. And so, I mean, I think I've talked about it before on the podcast, but I had brutal hemorrhoids from giving birth. Like I am talking like brutal, like took months to recover from, and I'd never had them prior. And so we have a higher bed, and we had her in the bassinet next to the bed. And so getting up and out of bed over and over and over again to nurse her, I was like, I can't do this. I was like, A, I'm exhausted. B, my ass hurts. And C, like, she just needs to sleep. So if she wants to sleep and nurse and then I can sleep, like, that's what we're going to do. And that's what we ended up doing. And it just works because then I got sleep and then I wasn't, like, cranky throughout the day. And, I mean,
absolutely.
I think, too, depending where you are, I guess, in a lot of other countries, bed sharing is far more normalized than it is in the United States. And
yes, absolutely.
It's just being mindful of like how you're bed sharing, like safe bed sharing. It is possible. Like if you're, for example, if you're like drinking and doing drugs and then rolling over on your baby, that's different. That's not a great example, but if you're having
actually,
too
no,
much,
that's a good example. I actually know someone personally that actually lost a child that way.
Oh my God.
very, very, very sad. obviously I'm not going to say names, but
no, yeah,
it was the father. It was the father. He came home from a night of drinking and got into the bed with his girlfriend or wife and rolled onto his 8-month-old, and that was it. So yeah, like you said, there are ways to do it.
Yeah, it like, has to be
safe ways to do it.
It has to be safe, and you have to be mindful of it. And but like stories like that are what scare people so much and may deter people from doing it. But then, for example, are you bed sharing with both of your babies or just one?
So I only with my first, I bed shared with her until she was about 6 months.
Okay.
Where she was right beside me. I had just like a thin sheet, one pillow for myself, mm-hmm. nothing else, up against the wall so she wouldn't roll off. And then I didn't want her to get used to it to the point where we couldn't get her into her own bedroom.
Okay.
I had like a lot of back pain as well. So laying on my side,
mm-hmm.
like it hurt. Like I never felt like rested. So we had to do that transition at about 6 or 7 months. So she was into her own bed at 7 months mm-hmm. after we did sleep training, which is also another big yes, no debate.
Yeah.
So we did sleep training with her. And then with my second, when my second was born is actually when I had heard about my friend that had lost his baby. Okay. So that did scare me. We bed shared for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then I brought a crib into our bedroom. And then we just like co-slept, like she slept in her crib and then I would bring her into the bed. Most nights I would end up just falling asleep after her like 2 a.m. feed.
Gotcha. Okay.
But now they're both in their own bedrooms and the bed's mine again. But
the bed's mine again.
I know a lot of people that I know a lot of people like five people families that like share a bed.
Yeah.
Like I don't think I could do that just because I sleep like diagonally, so we'd have to have like three king beds attached.
I was gonna say a massive bed.
yeah. But yeah, a lot of fun topics. Now that we get into the the debate part, but
yeah,
it all plays into that postpartum stuff. Like all these decisions that you make gives you that anxiety that kind of just sparks that feeling of, you know, am I being enough? Am I good enough? Am I doing this right?
Mm-hmm.
And you all are, like all the moms out there, you're doing it right.
Yeah.
That's my, whatever it takes. Every baby is different. My mother-in-law, so Richard, my husband, he was apparently the perfect baby. Like slept through the night at a week old.
Some babies do.
Yeah. Slept through a night, a week old, like was out of a diaper by one.
Wow.
Yeah. Like he was like the perfect baby.
Angel baby.
So yeah. Sorry. I keep having this alarm go off.
It's okay.
And then her following two sons as well kind of fell into those, like she just had great babies. So when I was really struggling, she was kind of shocked to see how difficult some babies could be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, every baby's different.
Well, I mean,
some babies get colic till they're like a year. Like some babies just cry for a year. Some babies cry till they're 3 months.
Yeah.
It's
and I think that's, like I was saying, there are so many layers to parenthood and motherhood, and there are so many judgments and opinions and like debates, like you said. And so at the end of the day, what it comes down to is every baby's different. Like however you're choosing to parent your baby, to mother your baby, like that's the best way. Like, and there's, I feel like I was saying before, if you're sharing your own experience, people think that you're like, okay, well, this is what I did and this is what you should be doing. But it's like, no, I'm just talking about what works for me, and what works for me might not work for you. You know, and that at the end of the day, absolutely. It's just like remembering, however, like there's this quote and I can't remember it off, like how it's said exactly, but it's like mothering, like you mother best when you're just like mothering the way that you would mother or something. I don't know. That sounds silly. Mm-hmm. I have to find it. But it's true.
No, but that makes sense.
Like you mother best when you just follow your instincts and do what works for you, and what works for your baby works for your family. But I I did want to kind of like go back to what you were talking about your OB who stitched you up too tight, because as soon as you started talking about your postpartum experience and your healing and what was going on, I was like, oh no, because I have heard that. I've heard stories like that, and there have actually been like articles that have been shared about it, and they call it the husband stitch in quotation marks.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, we have to stitch her up like a little bit more so she doesn't have a loose hoo-ha, and
keep her tight. Yeah.
Oh my God. I remember reading that and I was mortified. Like, absolutely mortified, because, and I'm so glad that you shared that, because yes, it's very personal, and but there are some people that happens to and they have no idea, and then nobody, even if they go in and get looked at, people still sometimes don't pick up on that. They don't realize it. And I mean, I'm not happy that you had to go through that and had to have that like corrected, but I'm glad that it was like fixed, because then you go through, okay, you just had your kids and you've been having sex normally your entire life. And then now all of a sudden sex is not fun anymore. And you're like, what the hell is going on? And then some people, if they don't like address those things, they may deal with that for years or forever.
Yep.
And like you said, like there's like a shame to talk about it. Like, hey, something isn't right. Can you look at this, because like what was normal and felt good before now is completely different. And granted, yes, like your body's different after you have a baby, but that is like a whole nother level. And oh God, I feel like I need to like attach that, the articles I've seen about that to the show notes, because it's a real thing. And I want people to address that if that is something that they have going on. And I'm sorry you had to go through that.
No, again, it's fine.
It's fine now, but
I mean, even at the time, like my husband didn't really understand. Like the only way I could explain how it felt when we would try to have sex, it was like, it felt like there was a bone there that like shouldn't have been there. Like it felt like my pelvis like changed and like it just would not fit.
Yeah.
And then every time we would try to have sex, my anxiety would like make me like tense, so then it wouldn't, like it would just make it so much worse.
Well, yeah, because what you're feeling impacts everything from your head to your vagina.
Yeah, exactly. And like the thought of the pain from the sex was awful. Like, but once, so because we conceived before it was fixed, so like it was, we learned how to get through it, but we would have to like plan it. Like say like, okay, tonight we're going to have sex, and then the whole day I would just be like, once it's in, it's fine. But just relaxing enough to get it through that, to get the head in, excuse me, but like to get that through that first little bit was like, it was something I had to prepare myself for, to relax, to like to get to that point, and then it was fine. Because then your body just, everything just relaxes, and your oxytocin levels just like relax your muscles and everything down there. But yeah, it was a struggle. In hindsight, it's kind of funny, because yeah, you're right about the husband stitch. And I, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually made that joke in the delivery room. Yeah. So the fact that it happened to me again, like, whatever, like it happens. I'm just glad that when I had my DNC, it was the doctor and he recognized that he had made that mistake, and he was honest about it and fixed it.
I was going to say, like, that takes a lot for people too, in whatever setting, but specifically with doctors, like realizing that he did something wrong, and then making sure that it was fixed like properly so you could continue on your life and not have to deal with that. I'm glad that he, really, really glad that he did that.
Yeah. Yeah. So with my second, the OB that delivered my second, she again had a bad reputation in the area. So I was nervous with her. And I literally laughed this baby out. Like the birth, we'll go into birth stories, you know, like you said, maybe another time or whatever.
Yeah, we'll have you back on the pod. We'll have you back on the podcast to talk about your birth stories.
But yeah, I literally like with this doctor, I don't want to say names because.
No,
you know.
No, yeah.
This doctor, we literally laughed my baby out. Like quite literally. Like we were laughing. My husband did something funny and I was laughing. And every time like I would laugh because I had an epidural, so I couldn't feel anything. And I was laughing and like I was pushing her out.
With each laugh.
So she came. Yeah. With each like little giggle, like I was pushing her out and then she came out and everybody, like the doctor was laughing. The nurses were laughing. My husband and I were all laughing. But because I was laughing, she came out like a little bit faster.
Okay.
So with this one, I tore again,
mm-hmm.
and no issues healing, but I lost my pelvic floor.
Wait, hold on. Sorry. One. It just so kind of, it paused for a second. You lost what?
I peed myself. Like my whole pelvic floor, like all those muscles were like completely just like gone.
Okay.
So I peed myself probably 10 times a day. Like I couldn't bend over to pick something up without peeing myself for like a good 2 weeks. But the healing process with the second one was way better. Just because of my experience with my first, I had my expectations, but yeah, it was so much better. So much better. In fact, I even forgot to go to my 6 week checkup.
So cause you were talking about your pelvic floor. So did you go and do like pelvic floor therapy to heal that?
No. So, when I brought my daughter in for her, is it like a week after they're born you bring them in? Like for their weight check?
I feel
one or 2 weeks?
Yeah. I feel like it's different everywhere, but I think it's definitely 2 weeks.
Yeah. I just said like, hey, I'm having issues doing this. Like I'm peeing myself all the time. And they're like, yep, just do like Kegels and just practice, you know, Kegels and whatever. Just it's normal. So I didn't end up having to do anything. I just started working out a little bit early, just kind of trying to focus on that area.
Okay.
And then, yeah, like I didn't have to do any other therapy, which was nice, but.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I mean, I feel like
it was definitely an experience.
Some people, I mean, depending on their pelvic floor muscles, have to go and do pelvic floor therapy.
Oh. Pardon me?
I said some people who deal with issues with their pelvic floor muscles postpartum have to go and do pelvic floor therapy after the fact. So, and then some people, like you said, if you're doing Kegels and you're focusing on that area and you know what exercises to do, then you can help do it yourself. But everybody's different, like we said, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, will you share a little bit about your Instagram account and then we'll talk about where people can find you before we wrap up this episode?
Yeah, absolutely. So the, like when you search the name, it's called this_is_parenthood, or the other name is Reality Parenting. So the page, basically I have a lot of people that will send me realistic photos of their journey to or in parenthood. And from there, I write a little caption, myself, and include the caption that they had posted as well. We range from, I'm actually having a hard time finding teenagers because I think people don't, I don't know if it's the generation that's not on Instagram or not on social media that have teenagers. But I have a lot of like toddler infant stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, basically just, this is parenthood or reality parenting. And I will be trying to start. I created a poll the other day just to do a mom talk Mondays, where it's just like a 10-minute conversation with a mom about something hard that they're going through like that day or that night or whatever, just like a 5-minute quick convo.
That's about awesome.
Potty training or anything. Whatever.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love that idea. And I'm really glad that we connected and you reached out, and I love following your account and everything that you share, because it's real life, it's reality, and these things need to be talked about and these things need to be shared so people know that they're not alone. Like, that all of the things that you're talking about are normal. They just need to be normalized and not seen as crazy or ridiculous. So yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for coming on and being so open and honest with us and sharing your own story, because I'm sure that there are people who have had similar experiences and will really appreciate this conversation.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on. I'm definitely excited to hear myself talk. I've never really listened to myself before. And I appreciate what you're doing as well. I've listened to, I think, most of your podcasts, and just hearing these other women talk so openly about their experiences. I wish you had had this podcast 3 years ago.
I know.
When I needed it. But I have it now, and I'm glad that, you know, I can share my story openly to maybe, even if I just like help one mom.
Exactly. That's
the whole thing of a page. Like, I'm not looking, you know, of course I want more followers, but I'm not looking for, you know, 50,000 followers. I want to help like one person.
Right.
I want to just.
And that's what it's all about. And that's why I feel like sharing your stories on the platforms that you have, even if you're helping one person, or that person talks to another person and that helps that person, you know, that's what it's about. It's being about being open and honest and having these conversations and normalizing all of these feelings and things that we go through. And so I do want to have you back on the podcast to share your birth stories with us, because they sound amazing. And I also think that people would benefit from those as well. So yeah, thank you for joining me today, and we will chat again soon. So thank you, listeners, for listening
Amazing.
To this.
Sounds great.
Thank you, listeners, for listening to this week's episode. I hope you guys all have a beautiful week.